The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Station one day, I made eye contact with a well-dressed older gentleman whom I recognized as Senator Craig. After having made eye contact for 30 seconds or so, we began walking towards one of the restrooms in Union Station. I followed him in there. We went to the urinals where we both unzipped.
Persons who are unmarried, as I am, by choice or by circumstance, have always been the subject of innuendos, gossip, and false accusations. I think this is despicable.
The restroom became busy, too busy to do anything. So we zipped up and then followed each other to the second restroom in Union Station, where we began the same process, and I also performed fellatio for a very, very short amount of time, as that restroom became busy as well. At that point, we both zipped up and left and went on our separate ways.
I don't know whether to laugh or cry or vomit. Welcome to the Savage Nation. It gets worse by the day. It gets worse by the day. First, the Republicans have the corruption problem. A few of them are in jail. Now they have the gay hypocrisy problem. Of course, you know, the Democrats are smarter at hiding their behavior. We understand that. I mean, where the pork goes is the bigger question. The biggest recipient of pork is not Larry Craig. The biggest recipient of pork is Jack Murtha. I mean, that's the fact of the matter. I mean, you talk about pork barrel spending, it's Jack Murtha, it's not Craig. And then what I love is that if Craig is investigated by the Senate, it'll be on the Senate Ethics Committee, so-called. The head of that is Barbara Boxer from Brooklyn. Barbara Boxer from Brooklyn is the head of the Ethics Committee. This is unbelievable. No wonder their ratings are in the 14th percentile. You hear, Teddy? You know why I love dogs? Because they're right up front about this. It's too much for me, the whole thing. Now, I don't know how to do this show today because I did this last night on the show. The story broke when I was on the air. And, of course, I knew it would be big news today. But I don't want to slip into the snickering adolescent game here. This is not even laughable. It's disgusting, frankly. And if it's true, then the Finoc has to go. That's all there is to it. If it's true, he should resign, and that's the end of it. There's always a job up there in a sheep ranch or something. He's a rancher, isn't he? He could bale hay. He could fix pipes. There's jobs for the man. But Senate material, no. We don't want him in the Senate. That's if it's true. But there's an awful lot of history here, you know. I have the Senate book here on the Savage Nation. Hey, by the way, excuse me if I'm a little slower and slurring. I did go to the doctor for something today, not the colonoscopy. And I have a slight degree of med voice delay that I'm dealing with. Idaho, Governor C.L. Butch Otter. Oh, my God, no. I swear to you, the governor of Idaho is C.L. Butch Otter. I'm not making this up. This is like Mad Comic. You know, when I was a kid, one of my favorite books was Mad Comic. Mad Comics. It kept me from going totally insane in junior high school. And I read it on into probably the ninth grade. But the Senate, the Congressional Directory, 110th Congress of the National Republican Congressional Committee, if I read this cold, it would be like reading Mad Comic. The governor of Idaho's name is Governor C.L. Butch Otter. Then there's Senator Larry Craig. Now, here comes the punchline. The other senator is Mike Crapo. Oh, come on. I'm not making this up. I'm just not making this up. It can't be. But it is. Now you switch to Illinois. What a bunch of left-wing whack jobs we have there. Senator Richard Durbin. That's Turbin Durbin. He never met an extremist he didn't love with a turban on. Senator Barack Obama, the invented candidate. Bobby Rush. Bobby Rush is a former, I believe, member of the, the Black Panthers, if I'm not mistaken. They say his job before becoming a congressman was activist. You hear this? This is a job category. Then we go on to the other distinguished congressman from Illinois, Jesse Jackson Jr., another one whose last known job was community activist. You hear a job like this? Community activist. Louis Gutierrez, Rahm Emanuel. What a crew coming out of that town. Whew. Illinois, Denny Hastert, Tim Johnson, blah, blah. Look, God bless him. As I said to you yesterday, the Congress of the United States of America today, with rare exception, very much is like the analogy of the monkeys on a typewriter. And the monkeys on a typewriter is an interesting analogy. In other words, they jump around on the keys and letters get typed on a piece of paper. And then people assume that the monkeys know what they're typing. And they say monkeys have a higher intelligence than they do. Well, it's the same with the congressmen and senators. The dancing on the keys of a typewriter is putting out bills that apparently look like they're pushing democracy forward, when in fact they're just pushing bills forward to stuff pork in their gullets. You understand that or not? No? All right, we'll move on. So you want to know the procedure I had today or not? Should we move on? Are you interested in my life or not? You know, here's how my life's going to work. I'm telling you right now. I don't intend to drop dead on the radio. I don't intend to have a heart attack on the air. Now, it could happen, but I don't intend to have a heart attack on the air. But I will eventually get old, and I will get sick, and I will let you know, like, along the way, as time goes on, because I'm like a radio uncle father figure to many people in the business who listen to me, rather. I may be the elder statesman of conservative talk radio, of talk radio in general. Did you know that? I'm actually proud of it. I'm not going to hide my age. I'm more youthful than most 30-year-olds. I know that inside and probably in some ways outside. But in age, I'm very proud of my age. And so therefore, it's a natural progression of a human being to get older and things happen and blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to let you know about it. It's like I'm a family member of yours, of the Savage Nation. So I'll finish this one up quick and we'll move on, because I'm not milking you for sympathy, because nothing happened. In fact, I think it's very good news. My father died young of a heart attack. My grandfather died young of a heart attack. My great-grandfather died young of a heart attack. So it's been a paranoia for me all my life. It drove me into the health field, drove me to the furthest reaches of the earth, looking for the cures, looking for Ponce de Leon's magic holy grail. And, of course, that is why I wrote so many health books going back to 1970. And that's why I did so much research going as far as the Marquesas Islands. I would say that's the furthest point from any landmass that I've ever been to, looking in medicinal plants, studying nutrition and herbs and all of that stuff. And I wrote 19 books in the field of health before becoming a talk radio host. Now I've written four bestsellers in a row in politics, popular politics. No one has matched that, by the way. Now, the reason no one has matched it is because they haven't. You don't know this as a record. Nobody has written four best-selling books in a row in talk radio. Nobody. In fact, it's almost unheard of in nonfiction in general. So it's a record. Now, the media hasn't paid any attention to it because they hate conservatives, they hate me, and they hate anything that I say. And that shows you what liars they are. But, you know, you want to talk about the bias. So let me go back to what I was talking about. I told you I'm a little bit off the mark. You got to understand it. So because dad and grandpa, great-grandpa died young, I was really running like a gun to my head all my life, always worrying about dying young and always worrying about what mark I'm going to leave when I die. You read my journals going back to 17, and I was always writing about what mark am I going to leave on earth and blah, blah, blah. I was always obsessed with this. So to make a long story short, when I turned 50, I went for an ultra-fast CT scan, which was quite experimental in those days. I had one of the early ones, and it was done at the University of California Medical Center. And I'm going to tell you the story. Now, the ultra-fast CT scan is very common today. You couldn't find them. There were only 4, 5, 6 machines in the country. The University of California had one. I knew this took pictures, x-ray pictures, of the cardiac tree, so you could see if arteries had calcium in them or not. So I go in there, and it took a long time then, you know, to get that. It was not as fast as it is today. They put you in a gown. They don't do it anymore. The long story short version was I go in and I'm scared to death because I figured the four arteries would look like four pieces of chalk, and I, you know, this is the end of the road already. I go in there and the nurse happened to be a very pretty Swedish woman, stereotypically pretty Swedish nurse, and I'm laying there and the thing's over and I say, well, what is it? She says, sir, you got to come here and look at this. Naturally, I figure I'm dead. She says, you have the arteries of a baby. Well, I jumped. I picked her up. I threw her in the air. I was so happy. And I said, well, God in heaven, I said, all the nutrition that I've practiced, all of the drinking that I've done, all of the bicycle riding, all of the wine is fine. The garlic and the herbs have paid off. So I was real happy. Now, that's when I started in radio. Now, I knew that when I went into radio, I was taking on the most stressful possibility for my life at this time. Believe me, there are other fields that are less stressful than 3 hours a day on the radio. I had another one done in 04, and I'm going to finish this up in less than a minute. I had another one done in 04. Three arteries were clear. One was maybe 30-32% occlusion. There was no follow-up necessary because it wasn't life-threatening, and basically I was going to continue what I was on, which were the nutrients and the vitamins and blah, blah, blah. Now I go for the third one this morning, and I'm scared to death because, you know, it's like you're getting older, da, 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 and I haven't had the results back, but when the technician left the room for a minute, I peeked over at the x-ray machine. I can read it as well as she can, and I tell you the truth, it looks exactly the way it did a couple of years ago, with his three arteries are completely clear, and one is occluded about 30%, I don't know. But tomorrow's the treadmill test. I'm going through a whole sequence that a person should do, and I've been negligent about because I've been my own doctor for so long. But at a certain point, you have to take advantage of modern medicine, even a Neanderthal like myself. So there it is, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com is the website. We have Larry Craig. I mean, you want me to play the salacious stuff of the homos trying to out Larry Craig? Now, what does that make this country that we're going to believe unknown homosexuals hiding behind voices? Let's say Craig is into this scene. Let's just say he is and he should resign. That's one thing. But to play these voices and to say that they're verifiable, is this the country you want to live in, that they're going to get some unknown operative of the Democrat Party to do this to how many other Republicans? You understand what's at stake. You know who's behind all of this. You know exactly who's behind the attacks on any conservative in this country. Rightly or wrongly, this is going to come back and boomerang on the Democrats as sure as I'm sitting here. I can guarantee you this is going to come back very soon and haunt the Republicans. But there's another element to this Larry Craig bathroom story that I think is worth mentioning. Remember when there was a protest 2 weeks ago against me trying to throw me off the air from the illegitimate scum in San Francisco who passed the proclamation calling me a bad guy, the same vermin scum left-wingers who say that Hugo Chavez, the dictator, is a good guy, passed the proclamation saying I was a bad guy. So except for one vote from the supervisor, Ed Ju, the proclamation would have been passed. Then they bust in 400, 500 Hispanic activists from around the state, you know, to march and call for my resignation. The newspaper didn't cover it. Not one major newspaper covered this story. Not one talk show host in America that you would expect to have covered it. A few did, but the guys you think are conservatives didn't come to my aid. And by the way, someone wrote a great article on that today saying that they're shocked that Limbaugh and Hannity and O'Reilly would not come to the aid of somebody whose First Amendment rights were being attacked. But of course, I wasn't shocked. But this is not about them. Just as the major media did not cover that story because although had they covered it, they would have given their Hispanic illegal alien friends a plug. They would have had to give me some notoriety, which they didn't want to do. So they were in a catch-22, and they chose not to cover the story. It's the Larry Craig story. Now, how do you think this is affecting the homosexual mafia and their plants in the American media? You know they're dying to nail Larry Craig because he's a Republican. But you also know they're hesitant to do so because it shows the dark side of homosexual life. I'll be right back. Savage. So let's see now. The U.S. military has a don't ask, don't tell policy that we all know about. And apparently the U.S. Congress has an unspoken policy called don't pass, don't yell. And, you know, maybe they have to revise the don't pass, don't yell policy in the U.S. Congress. The whole thing is it's entertaining in a certain way, but depressing in another way, that in a time like this, when our enemies are so intent upon undermining us and destroying us both from within and from without, that we have such questionable individuals in Congress. And don't think he's the only one. And the gay thing is not the biggest issue here. There's so many other elements that bother me more than whether or not he did a... Yeah, it's disgusting, but it's not the biggest thing on earth. To me, guys like Murtha, who rip our Marines apart and then are the biggest recipients of pork barrel spending, to me, that's a bigger issue. Let's put it to you that way. Or Dianne Feinstein, a war profiteer by any analysis. To me, that's a bigger issue than Larry Craig in the toilet stall. Hartford, Connecticut. Ferris, you're on the Savage Nation.
Good day, Doc.
Yes, sir.
As much as I would like to hear you talk about those subjects that only you can have the command of, I would like to go back to what you said earlier about your aging process. You talked in a tone that, to me, indicated a sense of the afterlife. Hello?
Oh, yeah. I've always told you that I believe in the next world.
If you're... if you follow Plato and Augustine with regard to transmigration.
Right.
Do you?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, no wonder you're so confident in your explanations of aging. I'm having difficulty repeating to my aging parents what they had me go to Catholic school to learn, and that is that there is no death. Christ, through his passion and crucifixion, has destroyed death.
No, hold on. It's not just Christ. That's for the Christians. But trust me, there are other religions that believe in the afterlife as well. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now, the first left-winger without a very high intelligence to have fallen into the sand trap is Chris Matthews. Chris Matthews just called Larry Craig a sexual deviant. Now, this left-wing hypocrite who has been struggling for ratings ever since he ceased carrying water for the Democrat Party has come out of the verbal closet and now is basically saying that all gays are sexual deviants. I think that you should make Chris Matthews eat these words in the future whenever he pretends that he's a friend of homosexuals. Ask him the next time you catch him at one of his so-called town hall meetings if he believes all gays are sexual deviants or only Larry Craig. Listen to this.
Good evening. I'm Chris Matthews in Iowa. Welcome to Hardball. The big story tonight, dirty politics. Idaho Senator Larry Craig, cultural warrior of the right, stands naked tonight, exposed as both a sexual deviant and a world-class hypocrite.
Well, I think the world-class hypocrite is Chris Matthews because he's calling Larry Craig a sexual deviant for performing an act that is quite common in the homosexual community. And so I believe the hypocrite here is Chris Matthews, frankly. And this is the story here. By the way, here's another crazy story of our degenerate society. Pennsylvania man charged with abusing corpse and coffin. Pennsylvania man was charged with abuse of a corpse and burglary after a funeral parlor director discovered him tampering with a female body being prepared for burial in Pittsburgh. Roderick Jones reportedly had removed the dead woman's stockings, ripped open the plastic covering the body, and was holding one of the corpse's legs in the air. Oh, my God. Well, you know, look, this goes to the – at least he's doing a job that you would say – you don't need immigrants to do this. Would an illegal alien do this? So don't say that there aren't jobs that only Americans will do. We certainly don't need an illegal alien to do a job like this. Here's a good old American job. Johnny Draper, the funeral a homeowner, was speaking with friends, and he noticed a light in the basement. Ugh, God. What would you like me to talk about instead of this filth? I'm starting to feel like a combination of Chris Matthews and the one with bug eyes. What's her name? The crazy one that likes these stories, this kind of story? Oh, this is made for the Scarface and Bug Eye. I can't remember Bug Eye. I don't remember her. Ungraceless. I have to go on my website, see what stories are up there, because I know you don't want to hear any more of this. U.S. Senator, blah, blah, blah. Bay Area bias and free speech garbled on my website. You can't read it. The whole site's messed up. My website is double, Drew. The entire website is screwed up. Anybody notice this? Go on my website. It's completely ruined. Hey, Drew, the entire website is like doubled over. The entire website is completely ruined. KNEW, San Francisco. Martin, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. I think this Larry Craig thing is going to get out of control. I'm a liberal, by the way, and I think that they're going to use this gay thing to strangle the Republicans.
Okay, and how?
And we liberals look for an opportunity to take advantage of you conservatives, and you've given us one on a silver platter.
Wait a minute. I didn't give it to you. I don't know Larry Craig. So you see, this is an example of your inability to distinguish one person from another. Right away, you're not showing a very fair view of the world.
Michael?
Yeah, I'm saying to you, I don't know Larry Craig. What do you mean, you conservatives?
You and Rush and Sean, you're always trying
to... No, don't put me in the same category. I'm not in their category. I'm an independent conservative. Don't make me a Republican because I'm not such. All right, look, sir, why don't you just go, you sick, degenerate pervert, you. I'll put you in a re-education camp before you put me in one, I guarantee you. I got friends who would like to take you off the street and put you into a re-education camp. You rat, you lousy little pervert, you. The city is filled with worms and rats. Worms and rats run this city. Half of them have black robes. You think I care? Las Vegas, Nevada. Henry, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, hi, Dr. Savage. I want to compliment you on handling the previous caller. You do transcend the scale when comparing you to these different talk show hosts. You transcend the scale, and they can't measure.
I'm not putting them down. I'm angry at them for a certain reason, and that's over with. I got over it. But I am not them. I'm not a Republican. I was never a Bush bot. I don't support Bush. On very limited basis have I supported Bush. He's a gigantic disappointment. And I was the first one to point it out. But Rush doesn't stop. To this day, the man supports the insupportable. And so does Wallbanger. So I don't want to be lumped in with them. But now to jump and say Larry Craig is my buddy? He's not my buddy. I don't know this guy.
Right. Our family's originally from Idaho, and that's a very conservative state. And it's been interesting to see just the disgusting things that have come out. I think there was a congressman out of Florida a year or so ago, that this happened.
Right. It was Republican Congressman Foley, who, by the way, was an excellent congressman. By the way, he was a superb congressman. And, he resigned, incidentally. And he had never touched any of the pages, according to all the reports. He had only solicited, he had sent salacious emails, but he had never touched any of them. Do you know that or not?
No, I don't think he touched any of them, but the point is you should try and avoid the appearance of situations like that, but it's been interesting to see that.
Well, that's right. Let's talk about that. What kind of judgment does a senator show that he cruises restrooms for male sex? If the man has such impulses, he can't use a prostitute, for example. Why did he do this in public? Because he wanted to get caught. Don't you think that's the reason?
It's just sick and wrong. I don't get it, but it's been amazing that he's been attacked, and your show brings up the reality that there's more than this out there.
Well, yeah, if we're going to talk about hypocrisy and corruption, and Larry Craig is in the spotlight right now, then let's talk about Dianne Feinstein and her husband Dick Blum and the hundreds of millions of dollars of contracts that Dianne Feinstein allegedly steered to her husband's companies while she was on powerful committees. Let us talk about the corruption throughout the Democrat Party, starting with Jack Murtha, the great war hero, and the amount of pork barrel spending he brought into his own district, and the fact that his brother is one of the biggest lobbyists in the business. How come that hasn't come up?
It won't. It hasn't come up, and it won't because of the influence that some of the television.
Correct, because both sides of the aisle are rolling in pork. They are living off the war. It's war profiteering. It's disgusting, and the guys on the front lines are dying while they're rolling in the money, their golf club memberships, their daughters' vacations, their sons' college educations are being paid for with the blood of the American soldier. That's what's going on here. And both sides of the aisle are guilty. You know that, and I know that.
That's right. It's choosing between the lesser of two evils anymore. Before we,
did you ever hear the man who said choosing between the lesser of two evils is still evil? You still choose evil?
That's right.
So when people tell me when the election comes up, should I choose between Hillary and Giuliani? And you say, well, you have to choose the lesser of two evils. I'll say, you choose the lesser of two evils, you're still choosing evil.
That's right.
I'd rather have a conservative running against Hillary and take my lumps if she wins and he loses, and have the conservative position clearly stated and give the American people a clear choice. I do not like middle of the roaders. I don't believe middle of the road is what's necessary in the world that we're living in right now, where the Islamo-fascist is trying to take over the entire world. Thank you for the call. So I could see no one's interested in this. So we can go on to other topics. I can't read my own website, but if I could, I could come up with any other articles. I'll wait till my website's cleared up. Let's see. Audio, Larry Craig, Bathroom, the singing. Oh, play the singing senators, Craig, Lawton Jeffords, and John Afcor singing God Bless America. They were the Barbershop Quartet. That's just as a filler.
God bless America, land that I love, stand beside her.
Okay, God bless America. She's blushing. America's blushing from the Barbershop Quartet. Here's an interesting one. The National People's Radio, better known as National Bolshevik Radio, is reporting protest at Philadelphia's King Tut exhibition because it doesn't portray King Tut as being black enough. Now, what's interesting to me is that Egyptians are not sub-Saharan Africans, but apparently Africans who are from sub-Saharan Africa want King Tut to be darker than he apparently was. This report is astonishing, but it's worth playing, and let us listen to clip 15.
It was neither Lily White nor Ebony Black, that he was probably somewhere in between.
Nina Jablonski is the author of Skin, A Natural History. She teaches anthropology at Penn State.
I hate this guy's voice, this creep. I don't like this creep, this tofu-eating creep. Get him off my show. I hear him once in a while, that simpering. So what is this? Now, King Tut was obviously not of sub-Saharan African origin. Do you know why they use the phrase in geography, sub-Saharan Africa, as opposed to North Africa? It's because there is a racial divide in the continent of Africa between Northern Africans and sub-Saharan Africans. And it's a very sensitive issue, but apparently King Tut, an Egyptian, was in fact not of the sub-Saharan African origins that the pressure groups would like it to be. So listen to clip 13.
Tutankhamun and the Golden Age of the Pharaohs has drawn a steady stream of protesters since it opened in Los Angeles.
Turn it off. It's him again. I can't. No, I won't have him. No, I'm sorry. I can't have that guy's voice. I don't like this kid. I know his shoes were too shiny. I just can't take it. Anyway, that's the story. So there's protest at Philadelphia's King Tut exhibition. Jesse Jackson is not involved in this. He's in England trying to make them ashamed to pay reparations of some kind. He's going over like a lead balloon in England. No one pays any attention to him. And no one cares about him here either. So apparently he's trying to find new hose to row. Or new rows to hoe? New rows to hoe, excuse me. That makes sense, doesn't it? I told you I'm off a little bit today. Did I say that right? New rows to hoe. Rows, yeah. 1-800-449-8255. KNEW San Francisco. Bob, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Mr. Savage. Just want to make a comment regarding, I agree with you that the previous caller lumped up all the conservatives together and it was wrong, but you also lump up all the liberals together, and I think that's also incorrect.
Well, no, I've since modified my statements. I talk about liberals like my friend Daniel Horowitz, the lawyer who came to my defense because he is a true liberal, who understands the First Amendment. And there's a large group of true liberals, his cousin Marty Garbus, who was Imus's attorney, a true liberal who also defended Lenny Bruce 30, 40 years ago, true liberal, who also would come to my defense if I needed him. They understand what liberalism is. the so-called progressives of today are not liberals. They are crypto-fascists. Do you understand the difference?
Yes, yes. Then let me ask you this question. If somebody's pro-choice, but he's he's for immigration, or if let somebody is for gay marriage, or he's against some other thing that's liberal, how do they possibly can function when most of the people have divided interests, and yet we're lumping each group based on one particular issue?
Yeah, what you're saying is you take one seminal issue, one major issue, and say, on that issue, you're a liberal or a conservative, when in fact, there are issues where people have split opinions on some. They're conservative. For example, I met many women over the years who said to me that they are fiscal conservatives but social liberals because of one issue, abortion. And they said they'll never vote for a Republican on one issue alone, and that's abortion. But on every other issue, national defense, on fiscalism, they are conservative. I've heard that over and over again. I'm sure you have as well. And by the way, many people who are social liberals are opposed to illegal immigration. You know that as well.
But then we're stuck because what party do you go to? Because it's an all or none.
Oh, you're stuck. Well, hey, welcome to the club of those of us who are stuck. I'm stuck too. Right now, over 15 million people who are stuck have gone onto my website, which is now not functioning. Drew, you fixed it yet? 15 million people have said, Michael Savage, leave radio and vote and run for office. That's 15 million people who are in your position. You see?
Confusing situation, really. It is.
Well, we don't have a candidate. But how do you articulate all of these positions in one single candidate is the issue. How do you do that? I assume that you have, on many positions, different viewpoints. You're not, in other words, you're not a doctrinaire person who has a party line position on every issue, right? You don't say, because I'm a liberal, I believe the following with regard to X, Y, or Z. I think you look at each issue and then take your position, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think – I wouldn't see – I'm like that, but it doesn't make you a liberal or me a conservative, does it?
No.
No? Okay. So that's why you listen to the show.
And
I appreciate that, and I thank you very much. And I'm still functioning, thank you. Part of this is a will to go on. Is like people say, well, why didn't you take the day off if you're in that machine today? And when you took a Valium, they made you. Why did you come on the show? You could have taken the day off. Because I love the show, number one. And number two, there's an element of, I'm looking for the right word. The word is not spite. There's another word I'm looking for. I have to be a role model for my children, number one. Then I have to be a role model for my listeners who love me. And number two, and number three, and most importantly to me, I'm as tenacious as a street weed. I'll tell you that right now, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. When I first arrived in San Francisco, I did a small book of photographs, which I threw in the garbage subsequently, called Street Weeds. And I had nothing. I came in with zero, nothing, 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 next to nothing. And I drew my inspiration from my love of botany. I went around the streets of San Francisco with a very good camera, and I took pictures of all the weeds that were growing in the pavement, the cracks of the pavement, in the gutters of the streets. And I saw the most amazing plants, because if you separate out what's around it, the garbage and the filth, and just look at the plant, they're quite beautiful. They're interesting botanically. So with a good lens, in other words, out of the muck, you ever hear the phrase from the Buddhist tractates, out of the muck, the lotus grows? Well, I learned so much by studying street weeds. And the title of that little photo essay was called Tenacity. That's me. I'll be back.
Savage.
It is the one and only Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Tenacity is the watchword of the Savage Nation. Tenacity, tenacity, tenacity. Hang in there, baby. Hang in there. Well, what do you want to talk about? Kansas City. Wait a minute. Kansas City, Rick, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi, Michael. I just wanted to appreciate you for your excellent use of the language. It's refreshing to listen to you. I enjoyed your take on most topics, but more than that, I enjoy not being fatigued at the end of listening by illogical and inappropriate use of language. It's refreshing to have someone so educated as yourself. I appreciate it.
Well, that's very nice of you. I appreciate your noticing the difference. Thank you very much. No hemming and hawing here. Hemming and hawing is not permitted. No hemming and no hawing. I try not to use hackneyed phrases. That's my biggest, the biggest challenge in talk radio is to not to use hackneyed phrases. And the unfortunate problem in talk radio is that many people didn't go past high school who were in it, and they never learned what the word hackneyed phrase, what the word hackneyed phrase means. And so they constantly use hackneyed phrases. 1-800-449-8255. You want to talk about Craig? You want to talk about this, that? You want to talk about the CT scan? Tomorrow, the treadmill. I don't want to go on a treadmill. God, they make you pant like a pig. And I'm not into exercise of that. I told you that. I had a treadmill once. They make you gag. You could drop dead on the treadmill. I do bicycle every day, but not to the point of gagging. You got to get your heart rate up to a certain point. You're afraid you're going to have a blowout. Like a hot tire on Highway 17 in 1952 after the Red Apple Rest. I don't need this, to be honest with you. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. WOR, New York City. Alan, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I was wondering if you would ever consider marrying a liberal woman.
I'm married, and I have been forever. And Mrs. S. is more conservative than I am, and she was more conservative before I was.
So is that a yes or a no?
Wait a minute. How can I get married if I'm married?
No, I mean, like, let's say, like, you met a liberal woman in your life.
Where are you saying, should you marry a liberal woman?
Well, I'd like to know, if you met, a liberal woman.
You mean if I weren't married and I was young?
Yeah. Exactly.
How do you know? Look, love comes in many forms, and I think politics should be the last thing you worry about when it comes to that.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, and hypocrisy is raging on both sides of the aisle. You've got the pro-family, family values, Senator Craig. Turns out he's a cruiser, according to everything, engaging in bathroom sex. He says he isn't. The other side says he is. Then you have the biggest hypocrite of them all in the media. I'd say the number one hypocrite on the left is this Chris Matthews character. Mr. Softball used to work for a Democrat operative. Then he went into the media, pretended he wasn't a Democrat. He works for the Democrat Party. He always has, like so many of them do. And he goes on today and he says that Larry Craig is a sexual deviant. So what does that mean now? Does that mean that Chris Matthews has come out of the closet and now believes that all gays are sexual deviants or only Larry Craig's a sexual deviant? I mean, someone should ask him, since he likes to call people hypocrites. Someone ought to ask Chris Matthews what he means. Are all gays sexual deviants, or is only Larry Craig a sexual deviant? Make him eat those words. That's all. And other things. San Antonio, Charles, you're on the Savage Nation on a completely different topic. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I heard you talking about your travels in the islands, and I was always curious to ask if you ever saw anything interesting performed by a kahuna, shaman, or whatever they call them, a holy man in those areas. When you traveled the islands?
No, but I encountered in Fiji a form of shamanism and future prediction that turned out to be 100% true for someone I was traveling with that almost led to his death. I mean, she didn't lead to his death, but she predicted he would almost die. and I've told the story twice in 14 years. In Hawaii, I never met a shaman. I met a lot of people who were shamed and shameful, but I never met a shaman.
You know,
I mean, you're interested. Why? Because you've met shaman?
Well, because you traveled those parts of the world, and I've heard different stories from different friends that traveled, like in South America and overseas, of stories. And I thought it'd be interesting to ask you, since you were there for a time, if you ever saw or witnessed anything.
No, I really don't want to go through that whole story. I make it a quick one-minute version. It's not as interesting as the original version. 1973. Going to the Yasawa Islands in the Fiji group. The Yasawa Islands are the most windward group. And we were crossing Bly waters. Prior to going out from the main island, every time I went out on a plant collecting expedition, I would go to see a certain Fijian card reader, okay? And she would read the cards in amongst the group of Fijian people. Now, I know many people who are religious don't believe in this because the Bible says that it is an abomination to believe in divination. And I respect your belief system, but I have a different view of the universe. I respect various energies and various powers in this world. I know that there's only one God, but I respect various powers and various paths to God. And I've had this argument with with Jerry Falwell. I don't know if you remember that famous one, but so we're in this room. She'd always read the cards and tell me the trip to the islands would go this way, that way, whatever. I paid no attention to it. I did it because my Fijian guide wanted me to go there, and she was a pretty famous card reader. She was from a group of islands where witchcraft was practiced. There's one area in the Fiji Islands where there's a lot of witchcraft practiced to this day. Not all of the islands, but one in particular. Anyway, so one trip, I took a young friend along as a photographer. Strong guy, very, very strong guy. And he was like so macho, didn't fear anything, right? Was sitting in the room, and she was a very shy Fijian woman. She dealt the cards, blah, blah, blah. And when she looked at me and looked at him, she didn't say anything. I said, well, would you please tell me what you predict is coming in the trip? So she shyly looked down. That's how some of these Fijian people were. And she said she would rather not say anything. And I cajoled her to talk, and she said, well, the trip will go fairly well for you, but it won't go well for him. I said, well, wait a minute. What are you talking about? And then she said, well, he's going to be paralyzed on half of his body. So, all right, well, thank you very much and goodbye. And we left, and my friend didn't care. He was young and full of himself, and he didn't think it meant anything, you know. So we go across the island by bus, took whatever. We get on one of these leaky little tubs and go across the Bly waters, B-L-I-G-H, where Captain Bly passed through a long time before. And we land on one of the Yasawa Islands. I don't know which one exactly because I would have to check a journal, which I don't have handy. We get off the boat. Within a minute of getting off the boat, my friend reaches down to his leg and says, wow, what the heck? And his leg starts to hurt him. I said, John, what's the matter? He said, I don't know. He said, I must have stepped on something. He said, my leg hurts me. Within 2 minutes, he couldn't walk on it. 3 minutes, he was lying down. He wasn't crying in pain, but he was in agony. So we carried him. We helped carry him back to the boat. And luckily, I carried antibiotics with me on all of these trips, and I insisted he take them. I had no idea what might have happened, but I assumed he might have either been bitten by something or stepped on something. And just on an intuitive medical level, I said, take these. Let's get you back to a hospital. Anyway, he recovered in the hospital, but he did become paralyzed on part of his body for a long while, and then he recovered. And apparently, according to people that I spoke with, I said, what happened to you? He said, a ghost bit me. He was joking afterwards. It turned out we had walked over a burial ground on the sand that we didn't know about. Because in the islands, they bury people in the sand near the water. I don't know if you know this, Charles. And he says that a ghost bit him. He was joking. He was somewhat of a poet. What really probably happened is he stepped on a piece of toxic coral in the sand, and that's what happened to him. But how did she know this, Charles? How did she predict this? Do you have any way to answer this question?
No, I've heard these reports. I'm a Christian myself, but I still, there's people that truly believe these things in these cultures that we're not.
Well, wait, how do you explain police who use psychics to uncover murderers many, many years after an event? How do you explain that? That's divination, isn't it?
Yes.
It is. It's divination. By definition, it's divination. And yet there are too many cases of police using psychics who say, I can't believe she closed her eyes and she saw this, saw that, saw this, saw that, the warehouse, the red thing, the orange, blah, blah, blah. And you see a woman crying in a freezer, blah, blah. And then they go find the woman, and the cops couldn't find her till that. So what I'm saying is there are energies in this world that the rational mind does not understand that we have to pay attention to. That's where I leave it. I won't close myself off to those powers. I don't have them myself, Charles, but I don't close myself off to those who do.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very
so I don't know if that helps you in any way. I don't know exactly where you're coming from.
Yes, just curious.
All right. Well, thank you. I'm an open-minded conservative. I guess that's a rare breed. And no, I don't smoke cigars. 1-800-449-8255. Cincinnati, Valerie, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, whining does not become you. I love you, but every time you go to a dentist or a doctor, you whine. And the way I take it, they had to give you a volume to get into the CAT scan machine. Is this true?
They didn't give me a volume, but I took a volume because I needed to stabilize my heart rhythm.
And I know you're human, but my image of you is this big, strong, tough.
Yeah, but that's the false image. I don't want to give you a false image. I have clay feet.
I
understand this. Many people want to romanticize a person. I refuse to permit anybody to romanticize me because I'm not a statue. I'm a human being. And I will bring my humanity to this show. I will do it. I know it's certainly a choice. I could have pretended I'm something other than a stick figure, but something like a stick figure or a statue, which I'm not. Valerie.
Yeah, I know. I just wanted to tell you.
Let me ask you something. If you took a prized stallion and you wanted that prized stallion to be transported by a train or by a plane to a foreign country, do they not sometimes tranquilize prized stallions?
Yes, they do.
Does that make the animal less than a prized stallion?
No, it's all coming together now. You put it in perspective.
Okay. You see what I'm saying? In fact, some people who are very high-spirited, when they're put into very confined spaces, like prize stallions, need to be constrained somewhat because they will tend to bolt against that kind of restraint, internally or externally. You understand that? So I had to take the stallion within and calm the stallion down. You follow me?
I gotcha.
All right. I hope you continue listening. If you want a fantasy man, go listen to The Golfer. He's perfect. He's perfect. He does everything just right, goes to the White House, knows everything. Wallbanger's perfect. Never do they have a fear of anything. The use of language is superb. And they know how to use a claw hammer or a number 9 iron. That's all you need in a man. Will, I haven't heard from anyone on WPRO in a long time. Here's WP. What happened to my Providence audience? Where are they? I'm preempted for like tiddlywinks over there. Will, WPRO in Providence, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Good evening. I have a comment about the divination topic, about people that are able to see in the future. And, it is biblical that these people, God has given human beings giftings and callings, like the Bible says. Some people have prophetic giftings, and they can see into the future. The difference is some people use them for their own purposes, and some people use them, for God, you know, in this country and in all the other countries. Some things that people are professing or practicing are evil. And some things, you know, they're using for the devil's purposes, and some people are using their giftings and callings for God's purposes.
So you're saying that while the Bible prohibits divination and considers divination an abomination, you're now modifying that statement to say it depends upon how the divination is used.
No, what I'm saying is, say, like, a prophetic person can see prophetic visions or can prophetically speak over a nation or a person.
Yes.
The visions that they see, it depends how they use their giftings. See, a person can be gifted in visions, but use them the wrong way.
Just yes.
Like if I were to, you know, I could make money and say, I'll tell you your future, or I'll
right.
See this, and you paint, you know, that's not the way God wanted us to use.
Well, what you're saying is you can use powers, even these powers, for God's work.
Right. Like God has a purpose with the very things that God had put inside of a man.
Well, you're bringing up this topic again that I started with yesterday about the tar pits, the La Brea tar pits, that, which is that if I believe that all we were descendants of the apes, I couldn't go on for another second. There'd be no reason for me to live. Because what am I living for, to eat another meal? What am I living for? If it's there, if we're not divine, then there's no point in being alive. And so therefore we must be divine. In order to be human, we are divine. And I want to talk about that for a few minutes. I know I can't do it now already. Here we come, another commercial break, just when I want to talk about that whole divinity issue. But I started to talk yesterday about the La Brea tar pit. So you see the tapir being killed by this Ontosaurus or whatever, one animal killing another animal in tar pits millions of years ago. You see the National Geographic of the water buffalo, the bear wandering on the ice pack and falling in the water, or the water buffalo it was somewhere, and struggling for 4 hours to come out of the get back on the ice and can't, and dies after 4 hours of killing herself trying to climb out. It's, you know, you don't know what to do watching these things. So now you say, well, what are we? In many ways, we're very much like the eagle, the water buffalo, the monkey, the dog, the pig, the ant. In other words, there are commonalities in all living forms. But we are different. And we are different in the form of the soul. God has used this animate body. Certainly, we have the animate body. In that sense, we have not transcended the zoological order. We are very much like the eagle and the monkey in so many ways. But in so many ways, in the most fundamental way, we are not the eagle and the monkey. And that is the divinity way. That's the fact that we have a soul. And we don't hear about the soul. The soul is persona non grata in the United States of America. The soul is being driven out of the marketplace of ideas. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back to the Savage Nation. So now we've stumbled from homosexual cruising to man's soul. And I ended the last piece by saying the soul has been driven out of the American media. When have you last heard the word soul, soulful, soulless? And why is it that the word soul is never used or rarely used anymore? I'll let you decide. But it's all tied into killing God and taking God out of the classroom, taking God out of the courtroom, and trying to kill God wherever God is found. God and the soul are intimately connected. And in order to kill God, you have to first have man forget that he has a soul. Once he forgets he has a soul, then he doesn't need God. Do you understand what I'm saying to you and how important what I'm saying to you is? The American media is a soulless God killer. The American media is the most powerful force for atheism the world has ever seen, more powerful than Marxism. And the media maniacs, the moguls who control everything that you see, everything that you read, everything that you hear, with rare exception, are by and large anti-soul and anti-God. They want nothing to do with it. You talk about separation of church and state, which, by the way, is not inherently in the Constitution. It is a fabrication of the Marxist left. But how about the separation of soul from state? And how about the separation of soul from the media? Think about all of these things, and that's why I'm telling you that the U.S. military had a don't ask, don't tell policy, and that's why the Congress has a don't pass, don't yell policy.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We're not going to laugh and do you know, boyish laughter at Mr. Craig. What are you going to do? So the guy is, you know, he's weak. He's got that thing going. You know, what are you going to do, kill him? He should resign. He's an embarrassment. You can't be a congressman or a senator with that. A lot of senators and congressmen should be forced to resign for war profiteering along with him. To me, a bigger crime than cruising a bathroom for a gay sex thing is capitalizing on a war that you say you oppose. You want to talk about hypocrisy? Take the Democrats that say they're against the war before they became in power, re-empowered, and now all of a sudden they're not against the war anymore because they're rolling in the pork barrel spending. That, to me, is bigger hypocrisy than talking about this guy. But I don't think you'll be hearing that soon, since both parties are rolling in the pork, you know. So we could talk about other things, whatever you want to talk about, anything. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. Santa Maria City, Alan, caller. He's up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, Alan.
Dr. Savage, it's an honor to speak with you.
Thank you.
In regards to your question, the woman in Fiji, how did she know this friend of yours would be paralyzed? I'd like to concur with your last caller from Providence, I believe it was, that the giftings that are given to us from our Creator are irrevocable according to the Bible. And I listened to you enough to know that you are a man that is schooled on the Scriptures, and know that the reason people turn the usage of these gifts is because of issues that happen in our upbringing, things that would steer.
But wait, how do psychics get their power, for example, the ones that police use to find missing persons, for example? How do you think they have those powers?
The same way that we, the prophetic voices of God in the Old Testament, the Old Testament times, the New Testament times, they all have gifts that are given, like all people are given gifts in their mother's womb, according to Scripture, by God, and they are irrevocable. Man does not override man, or God does not override man's will, and man can choose to use those gifts how he wants to.
Yes. Oh, I agree. I agree. When I was struggling with my inner selves, because there are many inner selves, there's no inner self. I liken it to a team of 16 horses. And the man who gets control of those 16 horses can literally conquer the world. When you can put a bridle on those 16 horses and make them run in the right direction, you've got all the power you're going to ever want. You know what I'm saying, Alan. And when you don't have a bridle around those 16 horses within you, you can go in any direction or all of those directions at once, which is unfortunately what I see going on increasingly in this country, where people are out of control because they've never been taught how to gain control over their impulses or their horses, if you want to put it in that context. But there's one other piece to that puzzle, which is that I met a holy man who told me that the greater a man's evil impulses, the greater good that man could do. That is why we see reformed criminals becoming some of the greatest Christians the world has ever seen. That is why we see reformed criminals become some of the finest social workers the world has ever seen, because they've harnessed that tremendous energy that was in them, that had been used for evil, and now they're harnessing it for God, and they can do the most good.
Yes, and they've faced their dark side and come to grips with that it's not what they were divinely purposed to do or use their time.
But there's a slight difference here in what you're seeing and what I'm seeing, a slight difference, and it's not to make myself better or worse than you. I don't see it as a dark side. I see it as another side. To me, it's another side that we're afraid of. It can only become a dark side if it does dark deeds. But that dark side is just as capable of becoming a bright side if it's used for good deeds. It's this energy, this phenomenal energy within some people that can be used if it's harnessed properly and directed properly. Then you can move mountains. That's what they mean by a man can move mountains if. But you have to first gain that. Look, let's go again to other fields, martial arts. How does a man gain the power to slam his fist down through boards or break bricks or break, you know what I mean? It's not just sheerly the physical force of his body doing it. You ask a martial artist, which I am not, they're telling you that they're harnessing that power from within themselves, which comes from somewhere outside themselves, and then is used through their bodies, which the body has been hardened, to slam it down, you know, break the stone. It's the same thing with mental things, Alan. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I agree with you that I believe that the power, if you can harness your power within, you can break a stone. And it's all a matter of training. Likewise, what I had said in the beginning about the gifts of God and the prophetic giftings, even though they go astray and use them for psychic or however they're using other than their divine purpose, you can learn by man's will to harness those energies within you and apply them in a very powerful way to do what you apply them to do.
And I agree 1,000%, Alan. So how does that tie into the news of the day where you have Senator Larry Craig cruising a bathroom?
That is sad, but I believe that the times that we're living in, there's been enough of the hidden closet sin in people, or the wrong, if you will, that man does, that it is time that it's being revealed. Because
So you think it's being revealed by God that the mask is being lifted off man?
Yes, I think.
Wow, that's interesting.
God is revealing the sins of man, and part of what he uses, ironically, is the prophetic giftings or the prophet to illuminate this. See, there's different functions of the office of a prophet, and some of them are used to identify and to root out the sin, and God is using those people to do that, because the time is here that where I believe God is saying enough is enough. America and the world has to come clean.
I agree. Totally agree 1,000%, Alan. And I've got to, unfortunately, move it along because you and I could talk forever. I need to go across the country now to Atlanta, Georgia, where a caller named Tim is calling from the great WSB, the flamethrower of the Southeast. Tim, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael Savage, it's honestly an honor to speak with you. I'm a person of faith, and I find myself in a couple of instances at odds with my own religious community on this issue of evolution. Because I believe that human beings are part of God's divine creation, and we're imbued with the divine in us. But at the same time, I honestly believe that evolution was the process that God used to create us. And perhaps these psychic abilities is just really part of the evolutionary process, that these people that have these abilities are, you know, maybe, I don't know, one out of X million, I'm just using a number, but perhaps in generations to come, it'll be the status quo.
Well, it has been said that mankind once had these psychic abilities when he was less civilized than he is today. In other words, you go to the primitive reaches of the earth and you find the hunter. How does the hunter have almost supernatural ability to see in the dark, for example? Now, many of us could learn to see very well in the dark again if we stopped looking at computers and televisions and looked and hunted at night. We'd learn to see in the dark again. Our night vision would return, in other words. You follow me?
Exactly.
And likewise, our psychic abilities, which are inherent in most people, particularly found in children, by the way, they're not all crazy when they say crazy things, but we kill it in our children. We suppress it in our children. We reject it in our children. We beat it back. The jack is put back in the box, and we say, no, Johnny, that's wrong. You're not seeing that. You're not hearing that. That's not true. Well, Johnny may be hearing and seeing those things. And so, therefore, some of these powers can be relearned, is what I'm saying. After all, we are more than what we appear to be, Tim.
Exactly. So I don't believe that the two things are mutually exclusive. That is, I can believe in God and believe in human beings' part in his divine creation, but also believe in evolution and that these things...
Of course you can. Absolutely. You don't have to fall back to this primitive view that we were put here at whole as we are in order to believe in God. I've had this argument before, and I have tried to have some of my listeners who are adamant about this come to understand that you can have both. They don't have to be either or. It's not evolution or God. It's evolution and God. That's how I've seen it. I've explained it to him. Have you ever heard me give my explanation for this?
I haven't heard it. I have not.
Well, I may not be able to do it today, Tim. I'm slightly off. I told you I had a little medical deal. It's not a big deal, but my mind is not as sharp as it normally is. I'm, you know, if I have 12 cylinders, I have 11 of them working right now, or 10 and a half. They're not functioning that well. I can go to a certain point in my analogies, but I can't grasp the whole picture right now. I'll try to do the best I can, but I may save it for another day when I could do it in a more articulate manner. But let me stumble around with it, because I did it once so well. Bagel, if we don't have it on tape, do we? If you could find it on – remember that one we talked about? Okay, here's the way it was done. We had a Jewish scholar call while we were talking about this, and we were talking about what time means. He is a very religious man, this caller. He's as God-fearing as any Christian, if not more so, than you'll ever meet. I mean, this man eats, sleeps, and breathes God. So it's not like he's doesn't understand all of that. But he said the way he understands evolution and time is a little different than the way it's taught, and that's how he's able to understand it. So when it says God created the world in 7 days, a day has a different meaning in the cosmic sense than we know what a day to mean. It's not 24 hours. Or you may say, The earth began, let's say, 5,000 or 10,000 years ago. We know from science that's not true when you look at fossil remains and whatnot. You follow me? So in other words, the time frame that is written in the Bible may be accurate if you understand that the time that it is referring to is not the time that we perceive it to be in this time today. You have the segment. Tim, stay on the line. How long is it, Beowulf? It's 14 minutes long. I'll tell you what we have to do here. We have to start it now, break it, take a break, and come back. Go for it. WOR, Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation. Where do you stand on the evolution question?
I believe that the nexus of science and theology is actually biblical and can be found in the actual words of the original Hebrew in the Bible. The very first word of the Bible, Bereshis in Hebrew, translated, actually mistranslated as in the beginning, is a testament to your position on God's having created other existence prior to the existence related in Genesis. God says, Bereshis, it is buh. Buh is the indefinite article, not the definite article, the. It is in a beginning. It is the construct form grammatically.
Hold on, stop right there. Stop. You are a biblical scholar, I take it, Jeff. You read the original Hebrew?
Yes, I do.
So I assume you've had an education beyond high school?
In several disciplines.
So in the original Hebrew, the Bible says not in the beginning, but in a beginning?
In a beginning of God creating heaven and earth. The word created, and again, the appropriate exegesis of the language is a...
Hold on. Someone may not understand that word. You're not actually using the name of the Christian God. You said exegesis. You didn't say Jesus, correct?
No, I did not say Jesus. I said exegesis as an interpreter.
Okay. Well, that's a big word for many of my listeners, particularly those who don't believe in evolution.
Well, I guess if one's intelligence is correspondent with one's intellectual acumen and education, then such language is a function of ordinary conversation, isn't it?
So, Jeff, you are a biblical scholar, and where do you come out on evolution and God?
I believe that that God created humankind with the dynamic of evolution, with the ability to adapt to circumstances, situations, and to live with a sense of dynamic. God ordained us, God mandated us to subdue the universe. That is a declaration of learning science, becoming knowledgeable. The first element of creation is in a beginning. It's beginning. It's time. God first creates time. Then God creates, and creates, by the way, in Latin, refers to creatio ex nihilo, to create something out of nothing. And God creates heaven, transcendental space, and earth, physical space, time, space, continuum.
So why let me ask you a political question on this subject. Why is there a certain tendency now in certain quarters of America to reject evolution? Where is this coming from?
I believe that it threatens the intellectual ability to interpret and understand that there's a certain level of culpability that humankind has for its own actions.
So in other words, they want to create everything is God's will. We have no free will. We're going back to where we're just automatons, where it's all preordained. Not only was man created out of whole cloth, but one's life is preordained as well? Does that go hand in hand with the people who are anti-evolution?
That is correct. There's a definite sense, almost of a predetermined, predisposed circumstance under which we relieve ourselves of liability and culpability for our own actions. I'm sorry.
So in other words, the very same retrograde tendencies that we see in radical Islam, where there is no free will, is now occurring in certain quarters in America? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that is what I'm saying. And I believe very much that to be the case. I believe that if you examine the nature of religious history and the evolution of religion, Islam itself is the result of evolution of religion. Muhammad took all of the religions available to him at the time. He took Christianity and made Jesus a prophet. He took Judaism and made Abraham and Moses prophets so that Islam would attract the Christians and the Jews.
Savage.
This seminar now on the Savage Nation, Jeff. Bible says God created the heaven and the earth, and he did so in 7 days. It does not say he experimented and created first the Neanderthal, etc. So now how do you answer those doubts and fears in a person?
The Bible indicates that God is proactive and responsive. I'm going to identify a narrative that takes place in the time of Moses. The children of Israel are with Moses in the desert, and God has given them the laws of inheritance. And the laws of inheritance are directed toward the sons of the fathers. And one of the families, the father's name is Tzelophehad, he has only daughters. And the daughters come to Moses, and they complain to Moses that they have been now excluded by virtue of their gender. Moses said, you know, that's a really great point. Let me check it out. He picks up the red phone. He calls God. He says, God, listen, we have a problem. These daughters of Tzelophehad are complaining about the laws of inheritance. What do I do? God says to Moses, you know what? They've got a valid position. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to change this and do this, and we're going to give them the right to inherit within these parameters. This is a God that is proactive. A God that is involved, is concerned, a God who adjusts. Now, it is our belief paradigm that God is omnipotent, God is all-powerful, God is omniscient, God knows everything, and that God is perfect. Well, if God is perfect, how can God make a mistake? And the answer is God does not make mistakes. The mistake is our misunderstanding and misinterpretation of that which God does. And absent.
Let's pause right there. So this was an amazing dialogue. I think that we should run the whole thing another day. But you could see that this show has a little depth to it at times. That goes. We started with the Craig story, and I was saying that the reason these things are happening is because soul is dead in America. That the American media has fundamentally driven the soul out of the you never hear the word soul. Remember in the 70s, he's soulful, wow, what a soulful person. Think about it as the last time you heard the word soul. And instead of seeing soulful entertainers, you see soulless entertainers, drugged up sickos wherever you turn, like this latest one, the wedding crasher guy, tries to kill himself. Why would he try to kill himself? Well, what, the poor baby didn't have another hit? What's the reason? There's nothing inside these people. They're empty. They're two-dimensional. They're cardboard. Why? There's no soul there. The soul has been driven out of the marketplace by those who control the marketplace, and I'm going to put it back in right here on the Savage Nation. So be here.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And
now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Harold on WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, I got a good story for you. Listen to this. My sister was here from Ohio this weekend, okay? And she reminded me of something. We were kids. We used to go upstate to, like, Wurtsboro, Spring Glen.
It's 1960, 1961, 1962,
like this. I'm about 4 or 5, she's about 7 or 8, and they would have the casino up in the bungalow colonies, remember? So they have.
Well, let me explain what that is. A casino was a sort of separate building where they had entertainment and acts and things like that, like a little theater.
This is true. So they had the casino. Now, we were little kids. You couldn't go into the casino. They wouldn't let us go into the casino. Who knew what went on in the casino? We had to go to bed at night.
Right. So you thought it was something really risque, but it was kind of innocent by today's standards.
Exactly. It was innocent by today's standards. So one weekend, I don't know how they did it, but they had this traveling troupe of midgets. Midgets came up, and they were on the bungalow colony, and it was in the casino, and they let the kids come in to see the act. So the midgets, they're tumbling, and they're jumping, and they're running up and down. There was this one midget who was very amorous with all the women, all the mothers in the casino. Now, it was a weekend because all the fathers were up there. So this one little midget, I don't know how he did it, he gets down real close to the floor, and he starts looking up under the women's dresses. The men catch on to this, and they don't like it. They run the midgets out onto Route 209. I remember it. The midgets got in the truck.
Oh, you mean they didn't today? They wouldn't run them out. They would be tolerant of the perverted midget.
It was the
today they would wonder if they could say anything to a perverse midget. They're afraid they'd get sued by somebody from NYU. They'd say that although the midget was on the floor, he was an oppressed minority. And he had an obligation to look up women's skirts because he was deprived of this as a youth.
The funniest thing, I was a little kid and I
They ran the entire... This sounds like a Fellini scene, running midgets out onto a highway.
It was the funniest thing.
But Harold, here's the main question I got to ask. It's very delicate. Were the midgets Jewish?
Well, I don't... You know, you asked me this question once before. I don't know if the midgets were Jews or not. I don't know. Oh, it was really bad. Happened up in the Catskills.
It just shows you what happens when you mix midgets with regular people.
It was the best.
They really ran them off the property, the midgets?
They ran them off the property. They ran them out onto Route 209. I remember it because I still go up there.
Were the midgets able to grab their valises before they left? Seriously now, I mean, do you know the full details?
I was there. I remember it. I mean,
they packed up their valises or they left their midget belongings in the room?
I believe they left their midget belongings there because.
Oh, God. This is a triple crime. In today's world, running midgets out onto a highway and making them leave their possessions, can you imagine what kind of lawsuit they would have had today?
The men got so angry, they ran them right out onto the road. It was hysterical.
Yes, those were the days that if anyone looked at their children wrong, the men would have beaten them up and thrown them out on a highway, naked probably.
Remember, they would have the chow chow truck would come up. He would have Chinese food. We would get Chinese food out on the road. These things are gone.
Oh, that must have been real healthful. Oh, yeah, Chinese food in a truck. That gives a new meaning to the word roach coach.
It doesn't happen. These things don't happen anymore.
No, but could you imagine eating Chinese food? I mean, you take your life in your hand in San Francisco in some cases. I mean, the restaurant, let's say, where you got to go in and have a pair of galoshes to go to the bathroom is a pretty good giveaway that you don't want to eat there. Okay, that's the start with. Where the water is like a quarter of an inch deep.
It was incredible.
But Chinese food in a truck, unheard of.
Chinese food in a truck, the chow chow truck. I remember it. I was talking about.
I never heard of that. That's a new one on me. Well, that's a good story. Midgets driven out onto 209. Thanks, Harold. Let me send you a gift. I will send you a. How about a free dinner coupon to the mafioso prison in Italy? Would you like that? I don't have a path to that jail.
Savage.
New York. Harold, you have a different topic in mind. What is it?
I wanted to talk to you about something a little different other than politics tonight. I enjoy your show. I listen all the time, but I thought I wanted to do something a little different. I have a question for you. I want to ask you a question about midgets. Is that okay?
Yeah, it's a favorite time. I mean, yeah, sure.
Okay, here's my thing. I live in Queens. I go to the bank the other day. Online at the bank, these two midgets walk in, and I see them from the neighborhood from time to time. They walk in. They always have different, beautiful, gorgeous women with them. I can never figure this out. Why do midgets always have the most attractive women on their arms? Can you answer this for me?
Well, there's one obvious answer, which I can't give on a family radio show, but I don't know if that's anatomically correct.
Well, that's what I was thinking as well. I mean, it would have to be that way, but
you know, God works wonders in strange ways. You know, he takes from here and he gives there.
It's,
you ever notice when a man loses an arm in an accident, his other arm becomes much stronger? You ever seen that?
Yes, yes.
Like when I was a kid, if I saw a guy with one arm, I was still afraid of him because his other arm was like a Popeye arm. You knew you were going to pull this out of me, didn't you, Harold?
Dude, I've spoken with you about midgets before.
Well, I'm fascinated with these folks for a couple of reasons. I told you, ever since I was a kid and went to the Ringling Brothers and I was walking in the crowd afterwards, high on the circus, so to speak, and you pushed and hustle and you reach over to touch your mother and you're 6 years old and you, Ma, you look over and she's not there and you're holding the arm of a midget and I, oh my God, I thought it was catching. You know, it was a kid. I can't help it.
I understand.
But what are you serious about the different women every time they're with them? I mean, good-looking women? Are they small women or regular-sized women?
No, I have to tell you. I'm telling you God's honest truth. I know these midgets from the neighborhood, and I have seen them inside the bank in the last 2 years at least four times with four different sets of
midgets. Well, now, wait a minute. Now you're giving something away. You saw the midgets in the bank. That unto itself is telling us something, isn't it?
They're doing business in the bank like everybody
else. No, they're withdrawing money. Maybe they're call girls that they're with.
Look, this is a possibility, but I don't think so. It's the middle of the day.
Are they Jewish? Are these midgets Jewish, or what's their religion?
Well, I didn't go up and ask them what their religion is.
That is such an off-the-wall question. But, I mean, what are they doing in a bank in the middle of the day with different women every day other than withdrawing money to pay for their services? I mean, if you were a midget, what would you have to do to get a woman?
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Oh, so I'm going back to my local newspaper. So here's the headline. Big block capital. Immigration raids raise fear. Canal District says community upset after second roundup. First of all, that community speaks Spanish. They don't speak much English, and they don't buy the newspaper. So now you understand why these liberal newspapers are failing. They write the newspaper for the people who don't read the newspaper. And the people who could read the newspaper don't buy it because it insults their intelligence. Thank God the federal immigration officers are on the roundup all over the country. They're rousting illegals from their homes at 5 in the morning and putting them in black vans and taking them away. And the brazen Hispanic illegal agitators don't know what to do. They're used to pushing liberals around like the patsies that they are. And they don't understand, like, how could this be happening in my country? Because it isn't their country. It's our country. Now, what's going on here, I don't really know. Because the reason I say I don't know is because Bush leaves the border with Mexico open. And yet we see federal immigration officers rounding up illegal aliens in many parts of the country. So who's doing what is hard to say here. Third article in the local liberal rag. This is a beauty. This is another headline. School drama programs thriving in Marin. Now, 2 years ago, I tried to tell you that we raised the stupidest children in America in Marin County. They were building here at the Redwood High School for millions of dollars a theater several years ago. And I remember mentioning to you on the show, in the year 2001, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, we need another theater. We need more thespians in the country. We have kids from China who can read, write, do math. They can do computers like whiz kids. And our children can act. You hear this? That's terrific. We're training children to act. That's all we need. Act and use marijuana. Their children are being trained in science, in mathematics, in computer sciences. And these morons, these potheads here in Marin, vote millions of dollars to build a theater so their stupid children can feel that their self-esteem went up because they did a theater piece. Kiss Me, Kate. I'm not making this up. Rehearsal. Songs from Kiss Me, Kate are played during rehearsals for the musical in the Year-Old Theater at Terra Linda High School Drama. And it says Marin's drama programs are booming thanks to creative funding and community support. Just what the doctor ordered. Just what the doctor ordered in this century is more children who can be ham actors. That's going to really get them through life. Now, what this is all about, the liberals who like to molest boys and girls talk to the liberals in the funding department who like to molest boys and girls. And they said to them, the best way to molest boys and girls is to get them into the theater arts and get them doped up and give them a good grab behind the curtain there and then take them home to your house for a little entertainment. You can't do it to a kid in the science class. After all, they're wearing aprons and goggles. You can't molest a kid as well if he's wearing a rubber apron and a goggle, can you? No, so you put him in a theater because a costume's easy to roust someone through. See, I try to make my point in a graphic way, which offends you liberals, but you know what? You deserve every ounce of this ridicule that I foist upon you because you people are not only destroying America, you're destroying your children. Your children, you're telling me, are going to be better children because they did a few amateur theater plays in high school? Instead of knuckling down and learning chemistry? Instead of knuckling down and learning computer science? Instead of knuckling down and learning trigonometry? You're teaching them to do Kiss Me, Kate? This is what Marin County is. And the children, by and large, come out as flops. Most of them live at home until the parents either drop dead on their own and they get the house, or they push the parents down a flight of stairs and they say they fell and call 911. Marin, no one buys this rag. School drama programs thriving in Marin. Hark! Hark! I see a thespian next to the lesbian. Then they get out of high school and they think that they're ready to go to L.A. and get a job. They wind up in porno. Then they wind up in rehab 2 years later and they call the parents and they wind up moving home. That's it. That's because they studied to be a thespian instead of learning to be a chemist in high school. What are they running? Kiss Me, Kate, in high school? Are you kidding me? Not only is the theater bad, but look at the piece they're picking. They show two other lame brain children who can't do anything else on the front page getting ready to rehearse for Pride and Prejudice at another high school on Monday night. And that's their big thing. All the schools are staged. Sure, it's easier for the old pervs to molest boys and girls if they're thespians rather than chemists.
Savage.
Austin, Texas, Brandon is going to defend hippie values. Brandon, you have a big job ahead of you. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. I want to know what is wrong with the hippie values of love and just acceptance of different people.
No, well, go and defend hippie values because hippie values are not love.
Well, I consider myself actually a hippie of today. I'm young. I actually do dress the fashion of hippies. Me and my friends, we're about love, about acceptance, about everything like that. And I want to know what's
Tell me what you mean by love and acceptance. What does that mean?
Well, it means you don't discriminate against people because their gender, race, their sexual orientation. Uh-huh.
So you're gay, Brandon, is that? Can you just come out and say it? You and your friends are gay, right?
Well, I am. I am gay. I'm not going to lie.
Well, it's okay. I'm not asking you to lie. So to you, that's the most important thing in the world is being gay, is it not?
Oh, no. No.
Well, that's you're just basically telling me that you live and you live for that. I mean, that's your whole life. The question is something a little different than gayness. It's about hippie values in general. You certainly wouldn't argue that the rampant drug use that we see in America today, including that amongst the young, is something that's positive, would you?
What do you mean?
Sorry, say that again?
Yes, say that again.
No, I'm not going to say it again. If you can't follow a thought, why are you calling a show to have a discussion?
I was going to say, I mean, I don't go around having sex with everybody. I don't do drugs. I'm just the values, the core concepts is what I...
Well, let's go again. I'll start again, and please listen this time, or else I'm going to get frustrated. We won't go anywhere. You're not going to argue that the rampant drug use we see in America today, which is a hippie value, is a good value, are you?
No, I'm not, but I think marijuana...
Well, hold on. Let's take it a step at a time. You're saying there's nothing wrong with hippie values. I'm telling you what the hippie values really are. One, the legalization of all drugs. So you're saying you disagree with that?
Marijuana only. It's natural.
It's natural. Then why do you think we are seeing articles coming out of the medical establishment saying that if we don't get tough on marijuana, more people are going to wind up in mental hospitals or die?
Well, also, alcohol does the same thing as marijuana.
No, don't change the argument. We know about the dangers of alcohol. But most of us think that marijuana is a benign drug when it's the exact opposite.
I mean,
why do you assume marijuana is helpful? Why do you make that assumption?
Well, it grows from the earth. It's from the earth. It's a natural. I can't do
now I know that you're a put on. You know, this is a fake voice by somebody trying to get my goat. We know that arsenic is also natural, isn't it?
I really don't know. I mean,
well, you don't. What do you know? You're like a dummy. You don't know nothing. What do you think? Because it's natural, it's good. I can show you 10 mushrooms that can kill you if you ingest 1 milligram of it. What do you mean natural? What kind of stupidity is that? There are aflatoxins that are natural, the microgram amounts would kill you. Well, where does the idea that if it's natural, it's good come from? Heroin is natural. Is that good too, Brandon?
No, heroin is not good. Heroin is not.
Oh, wait a minute. Heroin is natural. It grows from a poppy. What are you talking about? You just contradicted yourself.
Well, I'm saying marijuana, from my experience, has done less harm than heroin and all that other kind of stuff.
Well, look what it's done to you. Look what it's done to you. You can't even follow a thought for 3 seconds in a row. Here's the chief executive of the charity Sane in England. It says at least a third of murders committed by addicts of cannabis were preventable. There are murders, an epidemic of murder in England related to marijuana. Thousands of cannabis plants are being shut in England because they recognize, unlike the morons in this country, that marijuana is the most dangerous of all drugs. Look what it's done to you. It's gutted out your character. You don't even know what you're talking about. You have no idea that you have no character. You think that being gay is the whole reason to live.
No, it's not. It's just how I was born.
All right, that's how you were born. Wonderful. What else do you think is good about hippie values then? We just agreed that drugs are not good. Well, give me another hippie value that is good. Random and free sex with a stranger is good?
No, I've never done that. I've never had sex with a stranger.
All right, I'm talking hetero, I'm talking homo. I'm talking about random sex with strangers on a regular basis. You wouldn't argue that that's a good thing for society, I don't think.
You should. Well, no, that's one good thing. That's one bad thing. I mean, I have had...
All right, Brandon, there's another hippie value. So we got two hippie values now. Random sex with strangers and rampant drug use. Both are hippie values. All right, Brandon, thanks for trying. You're not a bad person. I just wish to God that your mental health was tuned up a little better.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I went to the barber the other day, Tuesday. I let my hair grow very long. It was very long, like long. I look like just a long-haired guy, older guy with long hair. Now, it's like a thing with hair, men and their hair. Naturally, I'm a little older, so the hair's a little thinning in the front. I'm not bald by any means. I still have a full head of hair. But it was very long, okay? And I'm starting to, like, I'm looking at myself in the mirror, you know, like, do I like it? I don't like it. When I start to get to that point already where it's an issue of vanity, it's time to cut it off. So I go to the, I hadn't been to the barber for a couple of months, to be honest with you. I binge with haircuts. Like, I let it grow for months, then I cut it. So then I have a beard, okay? I've had this beard since I'm 18 years old. I grew the beard originally because I was becoming a seventh grade teacher and I was very smart and skipped two grades. I was only 20 and I was going to teach the seventh grade. I looked like I was 15. So I grew a beard, a goatee, to go into the school so I didn't look like one of the kids. Now I'm no longer 17. I'm no longer 20. I don't need the beard, I say to myself, but I don't want to cut it off. No one will recognize me. So I go to the barber, this Chinese lady in her 50s in a barber shop in the city, and there's another Chinese lady. Both of them have cut my hair over the year. And we start to chat, blah, 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 blah. So I said, okay, just trim the back. Now, I don't know how you could ever get a barber to do what you want. You got to watch him like a hawk. If you doze off, you wake up, you look like a skinhead, no matter what you say. I said, look, just trim the curls in the back and call it a day. Okay, very quick. She starts with the trim, then right away, well, I have to do that, and then that, then I have to spin here, then boom, the clip. I said, please don't touch the top. I don't know if you're a guy, you know what I'm talking about. Guys with their hair, you don't even know. Women know, but guys, you don't realize what guys have to go through to get a haircut. So don't touch it, don't clip here, then that. Then all of a sudden, it's already getting shorter, and I like it. I said, you know what? How would I look without a beard? So she says, she looks for a minute. She puts a towel over my face under the nose. And she says, you would look 20 years younger. So now this is a huge decision. I got to tell you this. So I call over the other woman. They talk in Chinese. They both say you would look 20 years younger. I'm in a crazed mood. I was suffering from allergies. I was depressed again, the allergies. I said, I cut my beard off. She said, are you sure? I said, yes. So she starts with the hot towels over my face. I figure it's going to be an assassination, like Anastasia in the barber chair. I never had a hot towel treatment like this. She gave me 5 hot towels over the face. It, you know, relaxes every muscle in your body, a hot towel on your face. Did you know that? It's better than a massage. 5 hot towels, steaming hot, just with the nose, and my limbs are relaxed. Now she gets out the straight razor that she's going to really do. I'm talking a shave here. We're not talking. We're talking about New York circa 1950. The dons go in for the shave every morning. This was amazing. I never had one of these. I'm used to a regular guy, electric, occasionally a little trim with the throwaway. She's got that thing going, and I'm my neck's up. Like I'm looking at the door. I'm afraid who's going to come through the door. And there it is. I get up. I don't recognize myself. Now, I did this once before. 20 years ago, I had the same bug. I shaved off the beard. I came home, and my daughter, who was a kid, screamed. She started to cry and scream. She had never seen me. I was afraid the dog was going to bite me this time. But here's the beautiful thing about dogs. When I got home that night, Teddy knew who I was. He didn't see the beard, no beard. He smelled my hand. That's the beauty of dogs, is that they're half blind, and everything with them is a smell. Fortunately, they could not remove my scent with a razor. They could only remove my beard. So here I am, beardless in Gaza, so to speak, and I'm trying to understand how I look, how I feel, and I kind of like it. On the other hand, I don't like it. That's what's going on in my life. Beard, no shit. Barbershops are interesting. Guys never talk about getting a haircut, what you go through. Older men don't talk about it. It's like, all right, just cut my hair. Give me a trim. Guys make, but if you're younger, guys are very, very picky about hair, believe me. And I'll tell you something else you don't know about guys and their hair. You don't know this. Because I am a trained anthropologist prior to becoming all of the other professions I was, I had a master's degree, a really good one, in social anthropology. And in my years of searching in the South Pacific, I got very involved with the folklore, and I started to search out photographs from the 1880s, 1890s era in Fiji. The Fijian men who are Melanesian, they're black-skinned men, and they're very, very statuesque men, and very vain at that, as they should be. I mean, these guys are like Adonises, by and large. were so picky about their hair in the pre-colonial times, and literally in the post-missionary times, there were some pictures taken of them. These guys spent a lot of time every day on their dues, man. And they really worked it. They shaved their hair in certain ways. They put combs through their hair in certain ways. Just as the Maori were very, very picky on the kind of tattoos they had and were allowed to have, the Fijian men were very, very heavily into their hair, as are virtually every Native American tribe, as are the men in every Native American tribe then and now. And frankly, if you go around the world, men are very picky about their hair. But the thing is, in America, we're still into, like, it's too, like, gay to talk about your hair. But frankly, it's very masculine to talk about your hair. And the barber is your biggest enemy. You're afraid you're going to blink off and wake up with a baldy.
Savage.
I don't know what I want to do. I caught a sunburn yesterday. I feel like I'm, I laid on the beach at Coney Island. I stay out of the sun because I had the skin cancer removed about 8 times already. In the temple area, from the early years, from in the sun, when my mother thought getting color was good for me. Go in the sun, get color. I would come back like a lobster. Good, you look good. They were laying down a cancer in the skin. How did they know? They didn't mean anything by it. They didn't know. They didn't have a knowledge of it then. The same with the food. You know, the heavy food in the morning. Eggs and steak for dinner and meatloaf for lunch. Did they really know they were killing their son? They wouldn't have done it, I don't think. Do you think maybe they were doing it on purpose to get rid of the males? Sometimes I think that generation of women was like as a female cult. They got married only to have a daughter, the son they could have done without, and the husband. Then the Viagra came along. Thank God many of them passed away before that. Could you imagine that? That the man loses the ability just at the right point when the woman doesn't really want him anymore to do that. Now all of a sudden, bing, they got Viagra going around. A guy could be any age. Suddenly he's like he's got a glint in his eye and he's stalking her all over the house, and she don't want nothing to do with the guy. It's like a curse for a middle-aged woman. You know, you think every woman wants to do this? They don't. Most of them leave it behind them at a certain point. But in those days, the women gave it up after, like, the second child. They had sex twice, 2 children, that was it. God didn't want them to enjoy themselves because they never did enjoy it. Would you have enjoyed it either if your husband was like a furrier and weighed 350 pounds and looked like Gerald Nadler? You know, and that was set up. Most of you don't know who Gerald Nadler is. You got to leave him alone. He lost a lot of weight. Now, I'm not making any allegations at all, but, you know, I saw something shocking. In his heyday, Gerald Nadler, the heavyset kind, that's how we used to say fat in my day, heavyset. Or night, they used to say he's light on his feet. That meant for a fat guy, he didn't collapse altogether when he danced. But Gerald Nadler used to be really a hefty, heavy guy. Then all of a sudden, he went on some diet. Now he's like only doubly overweight. He's 150% of normal body weight for a man his size instead of 300%. There was a character in The Sopranos, remember? I forget his name. Is it Spatafori? The one who, no allegations at all, but he also lost weight, remember?
Savage.
U.S. couples seek separate bedrooms. Ah, look at this story. A survey by the National Association of Home Builders has predicted by 2015, 60% of custom-built homes will have two master-bedroom suites. This is an amazing story. The quest for better rest is behind the trend, as experts say the lack of decent sleep can cause marital tension. The option of having separate rooms has often improved marriages, they say. And they're not calling it separate bedrooms because people are embarrassed to admit it. They call it a flex suite to avoid any embarrassment. And it says the trend is not restricted to the upper end of the market. They say that with the practical necessity, snoring, nighttime visits to the bathroom, children, shift working, couples are often deprived a good night's sleep, so they're having two separate master suites. Let me tell you a little secret about that. It's only the poor who sleep in the same bed for their whole life, generally. And not everybody, don't get me wrong. It's a mark of poverty to have to share a bed with someone your whole life. The fact of the matter is, if you study the history of this, let's start with the royalty. They never shared the same bedroom, never mind the same bed. We're not talking about in the beginning phases when they're in the 90 days of marital heat. That's an understood fact. The 90-day period is over after 90, 91 days, according to every study that's ever been done. 90 days of insanity, by 91 days already, it's over. It goes on to a certain extent, but after 90 days, you have to live with this person. So first, it starts out as twin beds in the same room, very close to each other with a little nightstand. Then it's not so much twin beds. You get the bigger beds in the same room. Then if you have a little money, it's two bedrooms. That's how it works. But that's the fact of the matter. There's no shame in it. You can still get together when you want. But you have two different lives, two different minds. Why do you have to share every second in the bedroom? Well, that's some sacred place to be there? The way people are today individually, they don't want to be in the same room. And by the way, this is not limited to America. I spent many years, I'll give you an example, an anthropological experience about men and women. In Fiji, let's go back to the years I was going to Fiji in the village. And this is a delicate subject. The men had a men's house and the women had a women's house. And when the women went through their monthly cycle, the women went into the women's house with the other women. The men didn't want to be around them. Now, what does that make the men in Fiji? Does it make them sexist? Does it make them whatever ist you want to call it? They know from their culture that they didn't want to be around the woman at that time for whatever the reasons were. And I got news for you. The woman would rather be with her friends at that time than the guy. So he went over to the friend's house. They all hung out and slept in the same big straw hut. And the women slept together. That's how they did it in Fiji. I'm giving you one example. So this whole idea of how to raise a child or how to live with a woman or a woman how to live with a man, there's no set rule. There's no set rules in this area. And a lot of what we see going on today is a devolution, not an evolution. The people don't even actually understand how to live with each other or how to raise children. And what they always do is try the liberal methodology in every case on the natch, and they think that by going on the natch with liberalism, it's going to work, and it often doesn't. What you have to do is go back to the traditional methods of raising children and the traditional methods of living in the same household, man and woman, woman and man.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening
to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
I have led a very rich and varied life from the time I was an infant. I'm very lucky in that regard, and I grew up on radio, so I do have stories are real. I don't remember them till I get on the air, some of them. I go into Manhattan by train with my friend, who will remain unnamed, hooked on Valium at 17, thrown out of the Army for being a psycho, was attracted to women with very large breasts with law degrees, and an all-around lunatic. I haven't seen him in a good 25 years. I understand he cons some a lawyer and the money and the Westchester things. Walks around, got very gray early from the Valium and thought he was Ernest Hemingway because he worked in the garment center. He had, you know the whole think Yiddish, dress British. He was that type. So anyway, but he was a good friend of mine when I was young because I tended towards crazy people. Crazy people interested me. So naturally, we gravitated together. And he fulfilled a missing link in me. I was so sane and so sound, I needed a lunatic as a friend. So we go to the city together, and we get into trouble. Now, we come out on 42nd Street near Hubert's Flea Circus, which is long gone. I don't know what it is today, Jack in the Box. And there would be underground stalls in the subway filled with smut magazines. And you'd talk about, see, today the filter's on HBO. They don't have to be in the subway anymore. Today the filter's in Hollywood. It's like lauded. Now you have to be, if you're a Christian, you have to be like underground. If you're a conservative and you don't believe in any of that, you have to hide it. You have to, like a Samizdat, you have to be like in Russia while the communists took over. You have to hide your Christianity, your Judaism, and the fact that you don't like the entire sickness of the country. You are now hiding in the subway. Like Christian tractates will be sold in the subway in a stall today while the porno is up on visit Disney's new porno shop, you know, that kind of thing. So anyhow, we go in the stalls, and in those days it was benign porn that they had there. Today it would be like in a newspaper ad for brassieres what they were selling. And the same kind of guys always, like, fronted them. They're like wooden racks, not really, you know, and the magazine would be, oh, and what's, the older men there were like, they'd sweat, you know, like nervous, sweaty, crazy. You know, we didn't know as kids what was going on. We laughed at them. So then we go up to Central Park, go to the museum. We love the museum. I like the diamond display up in the Museum of Natural History more than anything. Those huge diamonds like King Kong, bring them back alive, you know, diamonds. Because the only diamonds you ever saw on a woman's hand, but when you saw an actual stone, this stone of amalekite came from Chaim Yankel's, came down from Mars and was found in Africa and brought from the deepest Africa, broken up into 30,000 jewels. By Rabbi Lefkowitz, it would be worth 16,000 millennia of money. But because it has not yet been cut up, we have it in this jewel case where it is worth exactly nothing. So we're down there on the 42nd Street subway. I don't know what's down there today. I have no idea. I haven't been there in years. But those days, racks, the girly magazines, the men, they're sweating. Now we go uptown. Switch trains to the museum, the diamond store. Now I remember the diamond exhibit. And we're outside on a cold day, perhaps not as cold as today, but cold. Believe me, it was cold. And I must be 12. My friend must be 13. I don't know how old we were, 14 at that time. And there were chestnut salesmen. Maybe there still are. And they'd have that fire going, which was very charming, very Currier and Ives, you know. It was like living Currier and Ives. Sort of a down-on-the-heels alcoholic white guy. Rosy cheeks, from, you know, he was always swigging from the bottle. But they were rather benign. But one of them, he'd sell you the little bag of chestnuts. They were so delicious. I could taste them to this second. And he took a look at the two little cherub guys buying the chestnuts, and he says, you boys want to see you want to see books? You want to see any books? I got books up in the apartment. You girls want to, you guys want to come up? You want to come up? Now, we knew in our hearts he was a sicko, and we just put him on a little bit. We certainly weren't going to go up to his apartment. I mean, this is long before Michael Jackson, but that type has been around a long time. So he said to him, oh, yeah, what kind of pictures do you got? And we'd see him get, you know, excited that thought he was going to score two young. What kind of pictures do you have up there? We're eating the chestnuts, and he's steaming up with excitement. What do you got up there, huh? Yeah, that was New York in those days, but at least you could see it coming. Today you can't see it coming. Today you don't know who your enemies are.
Savage.
What is everyone into massage for? You strip down naked in front of a person, you don't even have sex with them. What sense does that make? The only reason to get naked in front of another person is to have sex with them. Whoever heard of someone rubbing you down? And I'll never understand this as long as I live. Oh, I had a wonderful massage for a beautiful young girl. Really great. I'm sure you felt wonderful afterwards. That's just what you wanted, to be touched everywhere but there. It's exactly what you dreamed about all night long. Be touched all over your body except in the one area that you wanted to be touched in. That must have felt great. I'm not into massage. To me, it's just so Roman, Greek. I'm not into Greco-Roman wrestling. the first time, I come from a European family, you got to understand, so we never expressed, like the parents never kissed in public, there was no expression of affection in public, except maybe at a wedding they get drunk and like mock, you know, mock affection was allowed, you know, like overly affectionate, like grasping the wife in a mock hug or in a mock large Dean Martin-esque kiss. That was acceptable, but no actual love was allowed to be shown in public because they came from another world, another universe. So I still have, you know, a lot of my world is connected to the old world. So in that sense, there's a lot of things that I'm hung up about, so to speak, that I'm never going to get unhung up about. I want to be hung up about being massaged. I don't like it. I had, when I was like 18, I remember I was in the Bahamas or something with some guys. They're making a ton of money in real estate. They were major league money-making guys and really big money. I didn't know for money. My head was somewhere else. But I went down with them one summer. So they said, Mike, you want a massage? Yeah. And they said, put me in a room. This guy was a brute. I mean, he looked like a WWF, you know, heavyweight. And he was a sadistic. Oh, he was evil. So he dug into my body with his thumbs. I don't know why he picked me. But he gave me every muscle in my body hurt for days after that. I know he was sadistic. Now, I didn't show any pain because I didn't want him to let him know. I didn't want him to know he was hurting me, even though he knew he was hurting me. I wouldn't let him know it. I have a little bit of the Native American in me, even though I'm not a Native American other than having been born here. You know, I don't want anyone to see my pain unless I want them to see my pain, which I'm going to use as a weapon. I'm not going to use it as any kind of sympathetic thing, except I want to throw a ploy at him. But the fact of the matter is, I never liked the massage since then. But a lot of people are into this. I don't get it. It doesn't relax me. I don't understand it. You talk to them. You're laying there with a towel over your behind, with your neck stuck down in between a crack in the table, and she's talking to you, he's talking to you, your head is, and you're talking down to the floor. I don't like the oil. I don't like the stink of the oil. I feel like a seal, like a sardine that came out of a can. Forget it. I don't like it. I'm not into massage. I don't know why I'm even talking about it.
Savage.